Atlantic to the Pacific, from mountain crest to mountain crest, from canyons to the clouds and into the cosmos, we are pumping wattage high and low, plus streaming worldwide on the internet and keeping you company tonight. It's the place to relax and hang out. I'm your host, Joshua P. Warren, and this is Speaking of Strange, giving you the latest and discussing the weirdest. We have assembled the finest team of reporters and the most intriguing guests, and that's why we are your favorite hub in a wild, wild world. So keep it tuned right here. We're going to talk some about the strange connection between animals and the paranormal and why, unfortunately, I'm getting emails from people who say that a lot of their pets are dying right now. Just recently, my wife and I, we lost a dog, and he just kind of dropped dead, and we're trying to figure out what happened to him. So, you know, it's a strange, sad time. And this hour of the program brought to you in large part by the Sunshine Simple solar generator for the home. It's a generator that I myself created. We've sold these things all over the place now. And if you are interested in a generator, especially considering that the weather and other conditions are going to be getting chaotic this year, 2012, go to sunshinesimple.com and just watch the free video there and see why that I believe this is the best solar generator for your money in the entire world. And if even if you have a gas generator like I do, well, what do you do when the fuel runs out? We know that can easily happen. So again, that's sunshinesimple.com. So yes, think about what would happen if all the cats in the world suddenly died. And this is a report that was put out. It was posted on Yahoo. You're a big cat lover, Shelley.
Yes.
And they say here that at Purdue University in Indiana, they have really studied what would happen if all the cats in the world died. Because they say, yeah, you know, if you're a cat lover, you may see your cat lounging on an armchair, napping all day, but for the occasional stretch or window gaze, and they may seem, you know, useless by many standards. But in fact, they say that if the world's cats suddenly all died, things would quickly go to hell in a handbasket. Cats, both pets and strays, may fool us into thinking they depend on our food and trash for survival. But according to Alan Beck, professor of veterinary medicine and director of the Center for the Human-Animal Bond at Purdue University, they are expert predators with adaptable hunting behaviors. Quote, they are a significant predator of small animals and can survive as almost solitary animals when the prey is scarce, while thriving in high density when the prey is abundant, end quote. This is also being reported on by Live Science. And that's why we'd miss them. By killing mice and rats in barns and grain storage areas, cats are vital for keeping those pests in check. In India, Beck said, cats are believed to play a significant role in lessening the amount of grain loss caused by consumption or contamination by rodents. So in other words, it may be true that humans feed cats, but without cats, humans would have less food in the first place. So how dramatically would the rodent population increase if cats suddenly vanished? Just so happens, several scientific studies have been conducted that paint a vivid picture. A 1997 study in Great Britain found that the average house cat brought home more than 11 dead animals, including mice, birds, frogs, and more, in the course of 6 months. So that meant the 9 million cats of Britain were collectively killing close to 200 million wild specimens per year, not including all those they did not offer up to their owners. A study in New Zealand in 1979 found that when cats were nearly eradicated from a small island, the local rat population quickly quadrupled. And if the rodent population shot up, this would, of course, trigger a cascade of other ecological effects, On that same island in New Zealand, for example, ecologists observed that as rat numbers increased in the absence of cats, the population of seabirds, whose eggs rats preyed upon, declined. And so if the approximately 220 million domestic cats in the world all bit the dust, seabird populations would likely fall worldwide, while the populations of non-cat predators that prey on rats would be expected to increase. And so, again, it takes us back to this big web that we're all involved with ecologically and why it's so important for us to value what cats do for us. And I've always thought it was kind of interesting because, especially when Halloween comes around, there is this big connection between the idea of witches and cats as familiars. And, of course, black cats being associated with bad luck and so on. And in my book, Pet Ghosts, Animal Encounters from Beyond the Grave, that came out in 2006, I went back and kind of addressed why that we often associate cats with witches and dark things. And here's a portion of the book that I find really intriguing because I actually quoted from a document that was written in 1487. Well, you see, the idea of cats being associated with spiritual evil was sort of solidified and greatly enhanced by the publication of the Malleus Maleficarum, also known as the Hammer of Witches, published in 1487. The authors, Heinrich Kramer and James Springer, were Dominican Catholic friars who helped to spearhead the witch-hunting craze of the 15th through the 17th centuries. During its time, the sales of the Malleus Maleficarum were only exceeded by the Bible, which, by the way, says, quote, "Thou shalt not suffer a witch to live," end quote. That's Exodus 22:18. And up to millions of people may have been tortured and killed due to the influence of this book as a handbook during the Inquisition. In that book, cats were directly described as possible tools of the devil. So here's a quote I'm going to read you from this book that was published in 1487. And it's always amazing to sort of read how things were written that long ago. Quote, "A workman was one day chopping some wood to burn in his house. A large cat suddenly appeared and began to attack him. And when he was driving it off, another even larger one came and attacked him with the first more fiercely. And when he again tried to drive them away, behold, three of them together attacked him, jumping up at his face and biting and scratching his legs in great fright. And as he said, more panic-stricken than he had ever been, he crossed himself and, leaving his work, fell upon the cats, which were swarming over the wood and again leaping at his face and throat, and with difficulty he drove them away by beating one on the head, another on the legs, and another on the back," end quote. So soon after this incident, the workman was suddenly arrested by town magistrates and thrown into a dungeon without explanation. Days later, a judge accused him of beating three respected women of the town, each of them, quote, "bewailing their blows," end quote. And so the astonished man replied, quote, "I remember that I struck some creatures at the time, but they were not women," end quote. So the book went on to say, quote, "Now, concerning this, it may be asked whether the devils appeared thus in assumed shapes without the presence of the witches, or whether the witches were actually present, converted by some glamour into the shapes of those beasts. And in answering this, it should be said that although it was equally possible for the devils to act in either way, it is rather presumed that it was done in the second manner. For when the devils attacked the workmen in the shapes of cats, they could suddenly, by local motion through the air, transfer the women to their houses with the blows which they received as cats from the workmen. And no one doubts that this was because of a mutual pact formerly made between them. They used the phantasm of a cat, an animal which is in the scriptures an appropriate symbol of the perfidious, just as a dog is the symbol of preachers, for cats are always setting snares for each other, and the order of preaching friars was represented in its first founder by a dog barking against heresy, end quote. So here's what this means, okay, in calling cats perfidious, which means tending to betray, perfidious vehicles for witches, this popular guide immortalized a connection between felines and the supernatural, for better or for worse. Conversely, dogs are seen as representing the holy viewpoint, thereby elevating the classic perception of dogs and cats as eternal foes. Clearly, the ability for witches to transform into felines made a huge impact on the European culture, evident to this day, as traditional sorcerers are seldom seen without a purring sidekick, and black cats, long thought to harbor bad luck, are popular targets for Halloween tricks. It's no wonder that cats and dogs are not only our favorite pets, but also associated with ghostly activity. Of the two, dogs are most often mentioned as apparitions from this period. And of course, in the book I go on to talk about The Hound of the Baskervilles, written by Sir Arthur Conan Doyle, and some of the, you know, literature that really thrives on the idea of ghost dogs. But when we come back from this break, I'm going to tell you a bit about some creepy phantomals, as I call them, ghost dogs that in the Highlands of Scotland were called fairy dogs at one point, and then a creature that I think is particularly weird called the Gallytrot. You ever heard of a Gallytrot, Shelley?
Yeah.
And then maybe we'll work our way into some of the hellhounds and how they have always been associated with the unknown. I'm Joshua P. Warren. You're listening to the program where we dig into the amazing, the remarkable, the extraordinary, the downright weird. It's called Speaking of Strange. We'll continue talking about animals and their association with the other side right after this.
Dead puppies, dead puppies, dead puppies aren't much fun. They don't come when you call, they don't chase squirrels at all. Dead puppies aren't much fun. My puppy died late last fall. He's still rotting in the hall. Dead puppies aren't much fun. No, no, no. Mom says puppy's days are through. She's going to throw him in the stew. Dead puppies aren't much fun. Dead puppies, dead, 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 dead puppies. Dead puppies aren't much fun. Come on, everybody out there, sing along, okay? Dead
Yeah, it's true. Dead puppies aren't much fun. Welcome back to Speaking of Strange. I'm your host, Joshua P. Warren. Appreciate you spending your evening with us tonight. And we're talking this hour about the connection between animals, the ones we often consider pets, and the other side, the spectral. And if you're, you know, a ghost enthusiast, let me remind you again, we have ghost hunts coming up here in Asheville. We have some free historic tours every Saturday that take you into the Asheville Mystery Museum. Go to hauntedasheville.com. That's hauntedasheville.com if you want to take advantage of that stuff, because, you know, we switch it up. And in the winter months, we have all kinds of cool stuff that we don't do the rest of the year. So, I was talking about, you know, cats and dogs before the break, and how that some dogs in particular have always been associated with weird spiritual stuff, like the fairy dogs from the Highlands of Scotland. These large dogs with short tails and long feet are actually a mossy green in color, despite the popular moniker of black dogs, and we'll get to those. They appear to be guarding a cavern of some sort on the Isle of Tiree, and bark three times before viciously attacking. So therefore, obviously, no one living can say what happens past the third bark. The idea of these beings as foreboding guards is a common theme, also exhibited by the galley trot. Now, we'll get to the galley trot in a minute, but, you know, it's weird to me, Forrest, you hear about stuff like this, that these fairy dogs, they're protecting a cavern on the island of Tiree. Well, let's go into the cavern. You think we can make it?
We can definitely try. I mean, Shelley, you want to lead the way?
Are you willing to try making it past the fairy dogs? Because that's not a very intimidating name.
No, it really isn't. But I was going to say, you know, we could, Forrest and I could go and you could distract the dog.
Maybe I just need to dig up, you know, some skeletal remains and concoct some kind of wand, a dead dog wand, to spirit them away from us. But we need to do some research and see, has anybody, I mean, got a good
theory?
Well,
obviously they know there's caverns down there. They're protecting it. So.
Yeah, there's a treasure in there or something that is valuable. But here's the thing that weirds me out a little bit, the galley trots. Galley trots are tall, eerie specters that appear as hounds walking upright, sometimes with body parts seeming human-like. And they're most often seen around ancient European burial grounds or, again, sites of hidden treasure. As is usual with such beings, a sighting is considered a freakish omen of death, so observers usually flee in terror. So we have little information about such beings, but they're sometimes dressed in human clothes, may even be capable of speaking, and are certainly different than any ordinary creature on the physical planet. Shelley, do you know what a Kirk Grim is?
No.
You ever heard that term?
Uh-uh.
The Kirk Grim is a beast, or I guess it could be a variety of beasts that really stand out for me. In fact, the idea behind the Kirk Grim is pretty spooky. I'm going to see if I can find it, because I know I wrote about it here. I got to go to the index. Okay, here we go. Listen to this. Though cats, dogs, and horses have been popular phantoms in history, it is, of course, impossible to completely address the wide variety of animals documented. Virtually every kind of creature has made a spectral appearance in some culture. And when it comes to variety of species, I must at least mention the Kirk Grim. For hundreds of years, especially in Europe and the Americas, it has been customary to kill and bury an animal, or simply bury one alive, at the site of a newly constructed church or graveyard. The spirit of the sacrificed creature is intended to guard the property against vandals and others with disrespectful intentions. In some instances, even humans were murdered for this task. In that case, the resultant wraith was called an Ankh. So if there is a female spirit wandering around a graveyard, an old one, it might be an Ankh, a woman who was sacrificed. An important estate may require multiple animals to be sacrificed. And some of the most prominent were lambs, pigs, cows, goats, and chickens. In 1893, author T. Thistleton Dyer wrote about these phantoms in a book called Ghost World. And he specifically commented on lambs in churches, saying they often resided in the building's tower. If the lamb's vision is seen leaping about the grounds when service is not in session, it is an omen that a parishioner's child will soon die. That's kind of spooky, huh?
Yeah.
The idea that you might be able to see the spirit of some creature that was sacrificed and buried there. You might want to turn your microphone off. We're getting little whispers on here on the other side of the studio. I mean, that's kind of chilling.
Yeah.
That he just killed everybody's mind. No, no, Shelly can still talk.
Does she have to?
Well, we'll let her. We'll let her speak a little bit about this.
Creepy.
Do you think it's worthwhile? If an animal would really guard something, it's worthwhile to sacrifice an animal as a spiritual guardian?
No, I don't. I don't.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you can bless things or protect them in other ways. I don't believe that you have to spill blood.
Here's another creature called the Vulharand. Because despite, you know, all these stories about European ghost dogs, some are seen around the world. South Africans have long told of the Vulharand, considered an omen of doom, generally described as a shaggy beast, usually seen from a distance, only fully recognizable if the unfortunate observer gets within feet of the apparition. As opposed to classic black dogs that may only have glowing eyes, the Vulharand's entire body is surrounded by devilish crimson light. Such an appearance is more typical of traditional apparitions materializing in luminous, almost electrically enhanced forms. So, one thing that I want to get into is the Hellhound. The Hellhound is something that is especially bizarre to me because, I mean, if you consider that there are creatures out there like the Hellhound that look enough like a dog that we're familiar with that we can classify them and recognize them as dogs, yet they have these characteristics that clearly no physical, normal, biological organism has, then it goes to show that there might be a range just outside of the physical world that we live in which these creatures evolve similarly to how they evolve here on this dimension. So they look kind of the same, but there are just enough differences in this little dimension outside of ours that we temporarily encounter once in a while that they become these truly supernatural dogs. We'll talk about the black dogs for a bit when we come back. I'm Joshua P. Warren. It's the program where the unusual becomes usual. It's called Speaking of Strange.
Ow! Who said I see? walking in these woods? Why, it's Little Red Riding Hood. Hey there, Little Red Riding Hood. You sure are looking good. You're everything a big bad wolf could want. Listen to me, Little Red Riding Hood. I don't think little big girl should go walking in these spooky old woods alone.
The show where the unusual becomes usual. We dig into all kinds of wild stuff on this program, and we're talking this hour about the connection between animals and creatures from the beyond. In the studio with Hardwood Forest Connor, we have investigator Shelley Wright, and I'm referring to some of the stuff in my book, Pet Ghosts, Animal Encounters from Beyond the Grave. I always say I don't like this title, Pet Ghosts, because my book is about so much more. I mean, it's got pet ghosts in there, but it's really a book about non-human apparitions. And the publisher wanted to call it Pet Ghosts, but it should really be called, like, Phantomals and be about all of these weirdo creatures. And you know, Shelley, just recently we were discussing our upcoming trip to Transylvania.
Yes.
And some of the beings that you may encounter there.
Oh, that are going to eat me alive and kill me, right?
That's right, yes. The vampires and werewolves that you're going to have to be fending off.
Yes, we've gone through just about every scenario of that.
I don't think so. I think there are more to come.
More to come.
We've done a good job, but, you know, we've gone through one detailed scenario, and in talking to you about this,
mm-hmm.
I brought up a man that I wrote briefly about in this book named Jack Fiddler.
Yes.
And for those who don't know, I'll just read this little paragraph here. It's noteworthy that even in modern time, belief in Wendigos, which of course are these shape-shifting, bloodthirsty creatures that are Native American-oriented, belief in Wendigos has been so strong as to inspire serial killers. Jack Fiddler, a Canadian Cree Indian, claimed to have killed at least 14 quote-unquote Wendigos in his life and was tried in 1907 for the murder of a woman in his tribe. He and his son said she was in fact a Wendigo, but Fiddler was imprisoned for murder at the age of 87. Such instances reinforce the connection between ancient culture and present ideas regarding humans and animals. And, you know, we were talking about the idea that in Transylvania, Shelley, there is this connection between wolves and humans with werewolves, bats and humans with vampires, and so on. And here you got a guy like Jack Fiddler. I guess you could debate whether or not he was really killing people or people slash wendigos, but these people exist out there. And at very least, these are the ones who are going to be coming for you.
Such nice thoughts. Thank you for that.
I think you should ring yourself with silver crucifixes, some garlic.
Garlic cologne.
Do you have any advice for Shelley Forrest?
I'd say eat a lot of garlic, because, I mean, just wearing the garlic, in theory, doesn't work. It has to be in your blood system.
Right.
So, but, you know, it'd be interesting to over there if there's, like, I know the tourist stuff isn't really that like it is here, but if they had any, like, special, like, vampire or any garlic, like, type gifts you can bring back for people.
Yeah, that'd be great.
Well, there's going to come a day when we're going to be sitting here like, wow, this is our last show before we go to Transylvania. And we'll probably just devote that whole show to preparing for this trip.
Well, you don't even think I'm going to come back.
I have serious doubts.
I think you're going to get shanghaied in Rome.
You know, I don't even get to go through Rome now.
What?
No, I know. I'm upset. I'm pouty.
Where do you go? What's your plane flight schedule?
I know I go through London. I can't remember the whole thing, but yeah, no Rome.
Well, that might be a good thing because, you know, you said you had, a five-hour layover in Rome originally?
Yeah.
That is not enough time to even get out of the airport and get back.
No, right. No.
So, okay, listen to this. Though the earliest report of a black dog probably came from France in AD 856. Now, by black dog, I'm talking about what some call a hellhound. A creature that briefly appeared during an evening church service with eyes glowing when the room's torches suddenly extinguished. The most outstanding early experiences were in England. August of 1577. Now, strangely enough, during these encounters, these encounters often occurred during church services. The creature in France just harmlessly appeared and disappeared. We have no clear understanding of, you know, why this happened. But the animal that interrupted a stormy Sunday morning service in Bungay, England, was certainly a hellhound. Without explanation, the beast, physically described as a giant raven dog with blazing eyes, appeared in an aisle of St. Mary's Church, violently sprung on a member of the congregation. Now, by the time the hysterical patrons realized what was happening, at least three members of the church were dead. Some with throats and limbs torn away, some crushed by fallen masonry due to the leaping dog's or beast's weight. Others were scorched and shriveled by the phantom's energy. The region storm churned with, according to a pamphlet of the day, quote, darkness, rain, hell, thunder, and lightning as was never seen the like, end quote. So shortly thereafter, a black dog, perhaps the same one, interrupted another church service at Blytheburg Church in Suffolk, only around 10 miles away. The mauling and murder continued there. Once its bloodthirsty work was done, the powerful hound galloped out a door, leaving deep black burn marks on the surrounding wood, which are visible to this day. And an old verse records the Bungay event. All down the church, in midst of fire, the hellish monster flew, and passing onward to the choir, he many people slew.
Now, didn't you say that dogs were supposed to protect churches and, you know, you were going on and on about, oh, cats, they're so bad and
but
so evil.
But this is not a dog. This is a hellhound. That's what I'm telling you. It's a there's a big difference between, like, the Kirkgram or a Galleytrot, which is a spirit, or not a Galleytrot, a fairy dog, which is supposed to protect a treasure. These things are considered part of Satan's hunting pack. And to this day, if you look at this coat of arms from Bungay, they still have the black dog at the crest of the coat of arms. So, you know, there are different types of dogs for different purposes. And it says here, the dog's purported ability to savagely kill and having weight heavy enough to destroy parts of the Bungay building undeniably implies its solid existence in our physical realm. However, the fact it severely burned humans and the wooden doorway, plus the sheer scope and magnitude of its chaotic destruction and mysterious origin, are not consistent with any known normal animal. So this curious combination of, dare we say, natural and supernatural qualities makes it extremely difficult to understand such a being. Regardless of whether or not such beasts spend most of the time in some other realm, non-physical to us, when they do assume a presence in our realm, they are absolutely tangible and even augmented by physical powers misunderstood by present scientific views. They are certainly phantomals, and yet phantomals are not exclusively non-physical. So, when you pass through London, who knows?
Who knows what I'll find?
We're going to take a break.
Well, let me just say, Shelley, if you see something like this, do not say anything to anyone for 1 year.
Very good, Forrest. Yeah. If you see a black dog or a hellhound and you mention it for a 1 year period, you're doomed. Glad you brought that up.
Thank you.
Public service announcement.
You just saved my life.
When we come back, a story from Australia, which... I don't like the sound of this. It's about a new type of tattoo you can get from Ink Sanity. Very painful. I'm Joshua P. Warren. You're listening to Speaking of Strange. Appear by their own will at or near the time of someone's death. Crows, ravens, swans, owls, robins. Not sure if ducks are included on that list. generally easy to see such winged creatures and draw subjective conclusions, but difficult to study them from some stable, controlled perspective. I mean, how would you know if an insect you've been swatting at is a ghost? In fact, annoying insects do frequently vanish all of a sudden. Maybe these are specters. But I tell you something I've always thought was a kind of creepy and eerie. Welcome back to the final minutes of hour number two on tonight's Speaking of Strange. Next hour is the Dark 30 hour. And man, do I have a stack of just crazy, outrageous, and controversial material for you. Not for the kiddies. Not for the easily offended. That's what we do during Dark 30 hour, so you might just want to turn off the radio next hour. But listen to this. You ever heard of a spunky, Shelley?
A spunky?
Spunkies. Spunkies are ghosts that supposedly materialize as small white moths. Best known in Scotland, they are spirits of unbaptized children who met with untimely deaths. These lost entities wander aimlessly until Judgment Day, sometimes filling the innocent role of helping newly deceased human spirits transition, and sometimes leading ships off course to disaster. Vessel lights shining on a cloud of spunkies can reflect and appear like a beacon light, and such a confusing sight makes some ships steer into craggy, treacherous rocks. But whether or not this is inadvertent or the spunkies intend to harbinger such doom is unknown. Clearly, the idea of exploring subtle insect ghosts presses into the extreme fringe of paranormal research. All kinds of weird, fascinating stuff in pet ghosts, animal encounters from beyond the grave. Here's a creepy story about an animal from Madison, Wisconsin. Police in Wisconsin said a woman decided to take a python out of its terrarium during a book club meeting. And this thing just latched onto her face. 31 years old, this woman. Said it was a 12-year-old ball python measuring about 4 feet long. Just wanted to hold her, one of the people said. She apparently had prior experience handling snakes and had no reason to believe she was putting herself in danger. However, the non-venomous snake just bit right into her cheek and refused to disengage. The owner had to work with it and remove it. Finally, they returned it to the cage. They said it was kind of a happy ending. God, you know, there are so many innuendos in there. Woman has never handled a snake of this size, but there was a happy ending. Hey, you know, I'm not a tattoo guy. I don't have any tattoos. Do you have any tattoos, Forrest?
I do not.
Shelley, do you have any tattoos?
No, I don't.
Well, you know what? For those of us who are maybe considered wussies by tattoo standards, there is a new fad in Brisbane, Queensland, Australia. More and more people are getting a tattoo inside their bottom lip. You know about this? You've heard of this? There is a company called Ink Sanity there. And they say this gives you, quote, the thrill of getting a tat without the commitment, end quote.
What?
And they say it's because it will only last about 3 months because your lip will keep rubbing against your teeth and wear the tattoo away. So people are getting all kinds of weird stuff now tattooed inside their bottom. Why?
What,
you're at a bar and you're like, hey, check this out, baby. Look at that. I'm a badass. Look at this.
Look at me. I made a three-month commitment.
Yeah. Exactly. They sit down for 2 or 3 hours with each person, and they say, hey, we don't want someone to walk away and regret getting something. So maybe you've bit the inside of your lip before. We all have. Think of what it's like for 2 or 3 hours a guy to sit there with a needle and just write something inside your lip. Yeah, it's weird. When we come back, it will be the Dark 30 Hour. Again, some of you, you know, if you're easily offended, if you have kids around, just turn the radio off. Because this is going to be the hour when we get into some of the more outrageous and controversial news stories. We save it for the end, late at night. I'm Joshua P. Warren. You're listening to the program where the unusual becomes usual. Speaking of strange.